This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This is the secret story of a young Russian oligarch who hacked his way to a $93 million fortune. I'm CNBC senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers. In our new podcast, The Crimes of Putin's Traitor, I'll take you inside a shocking Russian crime targeting the American financial system. Attacks that sources tell me were welcomed by Vladimir Putin's government. Listen to CNBC's The Crimes of Putin's Traitor free on the Odyssey app.
Odyssey celebrates Veterans Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Now back to Warriors This Week on 95.7 The Game.
All right, 1 hour in the books, two to go. Every Saturday, 9 to noon, Warriors This Week. Evan Giddings, Dan DeBone. I got to ask you something, Dan, because you got just a laundry list of experience, particularly in the field of television. So I'm watching NBA Countdown yesterday, and friend of the program, friend of the Warriors, Bob Myers, is on the set before Orlando and Cleveland. So we're at the old ship, Steiny and I, just kind of watching. And look, Bob's fantastic on television. I think he's also a pretty good color analyst when he's calling games. But I got to ask you, he dyes his hair, right?
I have no idea.
Dude, he's got a little salt and pepper on the sideburns. Isn't that a telltale that someone,
he's
uses
actually
a little product? I mean, he's got a great head of hair.
I like him.
He's awesome.
He's transitioned really well into that. I thought he had a role with the Commanders.
Well, he was a consultant for the GM hiring, which eventually went to Adam Peters, who was formerly with the Niners. So I think it was kind of like a temporary thing.
I used to see him on the Lion Street steps during the pandemic. So it's these...
I think he still lives in Russian Hill.
Yeah. Is it Russian Hill or is he Pacific Heights? Russian Hill.
Yeah, they all blend together. Yeah. Those uppity...
Well, listen, man. At least he's in the city.
High rises.
And he used to run the steps. I didn't know him, but, but we would make eye contact because he'd be coming up, I'd be going down the steps, and you start at the bottom of the steps and you run up the Lion Street steps, which it's serious. I mean, it takes
trying to scale Everest.
And I remember this was during it was the LaMelo Ball draft and Weissman, and it was either going to be Weissman or LaMelo Ball. I saw him one time and I just said, dude, do not do LaMelo. You can't do LaMelo.
Oh no.
Yeah.
He listened to you. Well, that was a poor decision.
Well, no, he just said, he just waved me off. He's like, I don't even want to hear. He was not friendly. He just, not now, not now.
Well, you're trying to give him draft advice while the guy's working out. It's like the worst time to talk to somebody. Well, it's also COVID. I mean, respect the 7 feet,
yeah,
dude.
No, that's true. But he's a very much a Pacific Heights guy. He's a pretty boy, man. He's a SoCal pretty boy, $5,000 suit sort of player. So, yeah, there's a good chance that he's doing whatever it is that he's got to do.
He's also really, he also is very nice. I think he's pretty approachable. Maybe you just caught him on a bad day. Woke up on the wrong side of the bed.
Yeah, he's a nice guy. You just got to stop with the tears.
I feel like all you city guys just don't like people from other neighborhoods. Like, this is something that I've noticed. See, Cam and I are from the East Bay. We all get along. Like, whether you're from Antioch, whether you're from Emeryville, El Sobrani, Hayward, the Dro, it doesn't matter because you're an East Bay kid. All you San Francisco folks, yeah, that's right, I'm talking to Steven Rizzotto in the back, too. He's from Reardon. All you city guys try to divide each other. That's what all these, what neighborhood are you from? What neighborhood do you live in? Oh, you're Pack Heights. Oh, you're down in Westlake. Oh my gosh, Lake Chapeau. Where are you from?
It's the way it is.
You're
man.
All one. You are all
now
one.
It's like Chicago. What side of the city are you from? New York. What borough are you from? I mean, the minute Rosie, Stephen Rizzotto, told me he's from Reardon, now he says hi to me in the morning, I give him the hand. I'm like, bro, come on, man.
Now he's dead to you.
Got nothing to do with you. By the way, Rosie had some amazing intel.
Yeah.
Jonathan Kuminga's little brother.
He just goes straight to air with it. Okay, first of all,
playing at Reardon and wanted more time. Does that sound familiar?
I don't think that's a fit. Yeah.
All right, should we not go there? Rosie, did I just get us all in trouble?
No. Who's listening anyways? But we were talking about Kuminga, and I do think there is something to the fit. Again, why we're talking about JK is, all right, biggest takeaways from the 4-1 start for the Warriors. For me, Dan, it's so far they're able to win two games without Curry. Like, I think that's big. Last year they were 3-5 without Steph in games. They're winning with their shooting, and they're also winning with their defense, which was apparent in the back-to-back against New Orleans. And then the third biggest piece is, to me,
I would invert those two.
What, defense and then shooting?
Yeah.
Well, they're shooting like 45%.
Well,
also, the defense.
What creates the shooting?
Yeah, but the defense is a bit skewed, again, because you're playing Portland and Utah. Like, don't get me wrong,
no,
it's
I'm
been
just
really
saying,
good so far.
If we're assessing the team up to this point, I would start with the defense. I think they're number two with Oklahoma. The only two teams holding their opponents to under 100 points.
Yeah, defensive net rating, they're number two in the NBA, which is great. They're also shooting the hell out of the basketball. But the third part about it to me is again, like, what's going to happen with the vibes, right? They're having fun, they're playing with joy, they're strength in numbers. But what happens when they begin to face some adversity and Steve Kerr is trying to sell 12 or 13 guys who have egos, whether they're healthy or not, they're egos, that this is the way that things should go. So I do think it's important that someone like Curry is obviously bought in and playing well. I think it's important that Draymond Green appears to have altered his mindset.
For now.
But I do wonder how the Wiggins and Kuminga pairing or non-pairing is going to impact the team. Because I think they're both very important players to this team. Wiggins, more so. He's more established. And I think his game is, he's been here a little bit longer. He's proven it at a higher level. But I think Kuminga could be the guy to help this team take the next step if they're not going to break this thing up and go down the trade route, which we ditched earlier.
Well, I think a lot of that stemmed from, again, the bad start of the season for Jonathan Kuminga. And I think as Jonathan Kuminga begins to play better, and with that comes confidence, then all of that will be resolved. How is it going to, I know it, on paper it sounds as though, how are these two going to coexist? They want to play the same position. But if Jonathan Kuminga gets into a role where he's contributing and he's confident and he's playing well, then I think that everything will work out in the end. We just have to let this breathe for a little bit. We want to rush to judgment and label who this team is. Again, I'm living in the moment. I'm being present, and I'm enjoying what it is. I came into the studios today, and like, I am not going to let Evan drag me down and think about, is this sustainable? Can they do this in a month? What happens when they play a good team? No, I'm going to enjoy what it is that this team has been doing up to this point. I think that they have been, along with the Cavaliers, Kenny Atkinson, by the way.
Okay. All right.
What? Why are you? You are the youngest, most talented broadcaster in the Bay Area, but you're also one of the grumpiest young men I've ever come across. What's wrong with Kenny Atkinson?
I'm an ass. All right. That Cleveland team is pretty damn good before he got there. Like,
well,
seriously.
No, but
the only thing you had to do was tell Max Strus, who's hurt, to not play.
But you could say that about any. Listen.
Yeah, I don't think Joe Mazzulla is a great coach. His team won the championship last year.
Is Steve Kerr a great coach? Could you make the same argument with him?
Well, but Steve Kerr's done it over the course of 10 years.
My point. Is that it didn't happen under Mark Jackson. It didn't happen under Atkinson's predecessor.
No, but I think
JJ Redick.
Where Kerr gets credit is for after the Kevin Durant years, in addition to the heights that he helped take that Warriors team to.
But keep in mind,
people were poking holes in Kerr first 5 years.
He was signed, sealed, and delivered in New York.
Well, until he told Phil Jackson to kick rocks. But by the way,
just think about that. You ever seen that show?
Imagine trying to run a basketball team from the opposite side of the country. Phil Jackson lived in Portland.
That was a mess.
Running the Knicks.
That was a mess.
Knicks are, well, you're out of New York. How do people feel about Cat? You just had 44 and 14, right?
He's a talented. I love Karl Anthony Towns. Think about all the crap that dude's had to deal with. He's the number one in Minnesota. It's his world. Along comes Ant-Man, Anthony Edwards. Now he's got to, like, take a back seat. He's cool with it. Do you ever hear him chirp? And here comes Rudy Gobert. He got to split time with this coconut. Do you ever hear Karl Anthony? Then they ship him out of town. And he's in New York. He just balls. He is one of the most talented. I would say him and Jokic. And I would even say maybe, well, I won't go there. But there's an argument to be made that those two are the most talented in terms of what it is that they can do. He can't pass as well as the Joker, but he can shoot threes better than him. His mid-range, his left hand is up and under. Karl Anthony Towns is a baller.
No, he is. No, I didn't mean that jokingly. And actually, I gained a newfound respect for Kat. I could never really kill him after what he went through with his mom and COVID.
Yeah.
So, no, he's had to go through a lot of stuff, and he's still been one of the most impactful basketball players. I didn't like what the Wolves did, and I understand it was financial, which is also something that factors into the Kuminga conversation we're having. I think a big reason the Warriors didn't want to necessarily pay him is because they shrunk their roster and their salary this year, and they've been able to stay at or around the same level. It remains to be seen how good they can be, if they can be a playoff contender, maybe a championship. Who knows? But the thing about Cat.
Oh, easy, boy. Easy.
All right. First of all, hour three, Dan DeVone's bold predictions. I'm going to pry him out of his mouth with pliers. The other part about Cat, and in general, I don't like when teams have the kind of success that the Wolves do, and then they break up the team. Like, the Wolves were a 20-point. Or sorry, they beat Denver, and then I thought that they were a better team than Dallas. I don't think that they were ready yet. A lot like OKC. I think OKC, one of the reasons they're going to win like 60 or 65 games this year is they're hungry, because I think deep down they knew that they were better than the Mavericks last year, or more talented than the Mavericks last year, but they didn't yet have the experience, the wherewithal, the know-how to get it done. That's what I think drives them this year. The Timberwolves were essentially robbed of that opportunity, because front office decided they didn't want to pay or dip into the second apron, whether it was detrimental or not. They broke that team up. And that's why I think they had a nice win last night against Denver, who's got their own problems. But the Timberwolves, I think, are going to struggle this year, just because you're trying to recapture chemistry that you basically stripped it of.
Yeah, it just came down to who you're going to pay here. And it was a dollar and cents move.
Well, who they couldn't pay.
And they've got to fix their ownership, because it's just a matter of time before that sort of trickles down. I mean, is A-Rod and company own the team? I mean, they're going to litigate this.
Well, you're not a big A-Rod guy right now.
No, I'm not A-Rod guy.
For other reasons. Yeah, you don't need to get into that. You're not a big A-Rod guy.
Yeah, we don't need to get into that. How about the Lakers, by the way?
What about them? By the way, shout out to the 510. Always enjoy your show, fellas. Props to you, Dan and Evan. Go Warriors. I'll put 100 on them tonight at the Pepper Mill. Well, on the spread or just straight up?
What's the line?
Vamp for a sec. Talk about A-Rod and I'll check.
But the World Series story?
No.
Odyssey celebrates Veterans Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Money Movers provides investors with real-time analysis of the stories and the people attracting the attention of markets each day. I'm Carl Quintanilla.
And I'm Sarah Eisen. We'll cover the breaking news and numbers driving stocks and sectors, helping you make critical decisions. Plus, we'll speak with the CEOs, newsmakers, and political leaders playing a role in how your money is moving.
Listen to CNBC's Money Movers free on the Odyssey app.
But you guys have similar skincare programs, it seems.
Me and A-Rod. You know, A-Rod and I lived in the same building.
Warriors are plus 4.5. Wait, what?
Yeah, in Seattle.
He was slumming?
No.
He got the $200 million.
Well, this is Seattle. So, but I lived in the Harbor Steps, and he hated me because the doorman. We both worked out at the Seattle Athletic Club.
You guys look alike.
And there was a little shuttle bus that would take A-Rod to the Seattle Athletic Club, and then it would drive him back, and the shuttle would be waiting for him. And the doorman would tell A-Rod, hold on, A-Rod. Dan goes to the Seattle Athletic Club, too. I think he's going to be coming down in a bit. Like, just hold on. And so I would come downstairs, and the doorman's like, oh, A-Rod's waiting. I'm like, my man, you don't have to do that. Because I get on the bus, and it'd just be me and A-Rod on this little shuttle that would go to the Seattle Athletic Club, and A-Rod wouldn't even look at me. And he's just like, dude, I got to wait for you. You know who I am? And I told the doorman, I was like, dude, do not put me in that position anymore. I'm good. I can walk to the club.
Well, what do you mean? That's your fault. If you were on time, the doorman wouldn't have had to do that. And A-Rod wouldn't have had to wait for you.
Yeah, but I didn't.
It sounds like A-Rod was prompt.
No, well, I wasn't waiting for anybody. It just, the doorman called me and said, are you going to the club this morning? Like, he buzzed up to my room. And I'm like, yeah, I was going to go. And he's like, well, the shuttle's going right now. I'm like, oh, I had no, there was no times. You know, this is, so anyways.
Well, you as a St. Ignatius kid should know, if you're not 5 minutes early, you're late.
And then we resurfaced again in New York. And there's a woman by the name of Lindy Beauville. And I'll just leave it at that. So he was with the Yankees, and I was
also
in New York.
With Mitch Kupchak. Or
we just don't. I'm not a big fan of the guy. I mean, you know, as a player, he's great. It's just there's some people that are, you're just like, that's just a wrong sort of cat.
Yeah, he's greasy as hell.
All right.
No, he is. Well, no, he is. I mean,
all right.
It's something about him.
Yeah. Right. Phony. It's so phony.
Even on the broadcast, you can
phony
tell.
As hell.
You can tell. You can tell.
Just be more genuine, man. No, J.J. Redick in the Lakers. Look, we're going to talk about Kenny Atkinson.
We'll talk about a phony.
I used to think that, and I was out on J.J. Redick, but I got to give him, I think there's, you know, we like the culture word. Something's going on out there in L.A.
Who do you think is
going
to win more games this year, the Lakers or the Warriors?
Ooh, that's a good one.
I won't get you to bite. Honestly, I didn't believe much in...
Wow, that is really... You know what? I'll give you an answer, but you got to give me a while. But that's a good one. You know what they're doing in L.A.?
Well, I think it is. Yeah, it is a good question.
He's actually... And this took some stones. He's deferring away from LeBron and is putting it in the hands of AD. He's like reducing... And LeBron's cool with it. He's like, you know what? You're going to be a number two to AD.
Well, I think to your point about Kerr and... Let's say Kenny Atkinson. I do think that this is where those kinds of coaches... Well, Atkinson had prior experience as a head coach, so it's not exactly the same. But Redick and Kerr, I think, come from a similar place of... They weren't in the game. Like, Kerr was as a GM, but then he took a break. He was a broadcaster. So when you're not inside basketball, I think you're able to view from a bird's eye particular teams just with... kind of a generic understanding. Like, J.J. Redick probably looked at the Lakers last year as being very simple. Here's their best five-man lineup. It's, well, at the time, it was, D'Lo, Reeves, LeBron, AD, Hachimura. So we're going to start those five guys. It's that simple. Their best player, with LeBron being 40 years old, plus he's almost 41, it's Anthony Davis.
Yeah.
And... if you want to make it through the entire year by preserving LeBron for the time that it matters, you got to lean on your younger guys. And so that's where I also think J.J. Redick has more empowered that team is the bench is, decent. I think he's... Although, weirdly, one of the other players in that AMIC article that I was referring to about J.K. that's deemed most tradable around the NBA was Austin Reeves.
Hmm.
Which I found... kind of interesting, and I don't know if that's because
that's weird.
They don't like he. I think he's under contract. Maybe they want to.
They just re-signed him last year.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting.
He's getting a lot of. Well, you mentioned Steve Kerr and J.J. Redick. There's a lot of parallels there. I think that they're both guys that sort of like. Well, J.J. Redick, I think, was more of a star. Was drafted a lot higher. But he's able to relate to the guys, the Jackson Hayes, if you will, the guys on the sort of the end of that bench. And that's sort of what Steve Kerr's, I think, always been able to do. And one of the reasons why he's been as good as he is that he, obviously you have your stars. You got Clay, you got Steph, and you got Draymond and Kevin Durant and all these stars throughout the years. But he was always relatable to those other guys to keep them engaged, Those guys 6 through 10 on the roster. Because that's who Steve Kerr was. Steve Kerr was a guy, he came in the second round with Phoenix. He had to shoot his way onto teams. He had to He had to prove that he can get in the rotation with Chicago and win titles. Same held true in Portland and San Antonio. So there's a relatable aspect I think he has with some of those guys at the end of the bench that he's always been able to buy in, have buy-in from those guys. And I think J.J. Redick is doing that with Caleb Martin and Jackson Hayes. You're seeing part of that with the Los Angeles Lakers. Look at nothing about me likes J.J. Redick. You talk about a life of like a boulevard of unblinking green lights. The guy goes from Duke to the NBA to a podcast to the head coach of the Los Angeles Lakers. Everything about him says, yeah, I don't like this guy, but I do have to recognize that he is changing the culture out there.
Well, I also think where he shares a similar quality to Steve Kerr is they're both at their core red asses.
True.
Like, they're both competitive as bleep, but they don't show it publicly. Like, I think J.J. Redick probably lets on, I think, a little more than Kerr does. But I bet Kerr was that way when he was J.J. Redick's age. I think he's probably just learned to hide it a bit more. But there's the relatability of having multiple roles throughout the NBA. Redick's probably a better player, or was a better player than Kerr was. But they've all done it. They've been the 12th man. They've been starters. They've won. Well, Redick was a part of a team that went to a championship, but I don't think he's won a ring. But he's played with players that have. The difference, I do think, is in the communication, because like Darvin Ham was a player. He was a back of the end rotation guy, but he clearly couldn't communicate the way that Redick could. I also think he placated too much at the beginning to LeBron. Like I think that Redick had more of a relationship with LeBron James, and not just because they hosted a podcast together, but there was more of a mutual respect that was already built in. Darvin Ham, I feel like he placated too much at the beginning, and by the end, LeBron just didn't respect him. But that doesn't appear to be the case now.
Well, that's a perfect example of how not just anybody can step in and you'll be good. So Kenny Atkinson is doing something different. Because keep in mind, Darvin Ham inherited a team that the year prior went to the Western Conference Finals. All he had to do was just roll out that starting lineup, plug and play, and you win. But it's not as easy as that. And so I get it. Kenny Atkinson is taking over a good team, but 5-0 is 5-0.
No, it is. And again, this is why I think that what's it in John Wick 4? The Commerce of Relationships. Oh, that was John Wick 3.
Didn't see it.
Yeah, it's fine. It's a good series. You should get on it. From the 707, you're right. J.J. Redick was very rude to a 95.7 producer once, and I do think he's kind of an ass, but he's also so far helped this team to a nice start. The thing about Atkinson, and I don't know what his role was really the last few years in Golden State, but he has built-in relationships with the Cleveland Cavaliers. He was the head coach in Brooklyn for Jared Allen and Caris LeVert, who are now big pieces of that rotation. So he has, I think, again, similar to Redick with LeBron, different level of players, but he has a built-in respect when he steps into that situation, and he doesn't have to earn it, at least with everybody. Now, the guy that you have to monitor, of course, is your best player, and that's Donovan Mitchell, because Donovan Mitchell, I don't know what you think of him, but I think the jury's kind of still out as to how much of an issue he sometimes can be. He's a great basketball player. In fact, as far as scores, he might be the most underrated player in the NBA. Donovan Mitchell's a dog, but he's been in a couple situations now where, you know, he hasn't really liked some of the coaching staff. I think he was a big reason why J.B. Bickerstaff is no longer on the team. And I thought Bickerstaff did a pretty good job in Cleveland. But how Kenny Atkinson can take what he had and being able to learn a little bit under Steve Kerr, but I think largely just waiting for his opportunity to pounce, he's found the right situation, just like Steve Kerr found the right situation in Golden State, and at least so far, how J.J. Redick's found the right situation in Los Angeles.
Yeah, I think for Donovan Mitchell, it's not so much getting along with Kenny Atkinson or Bickerstaff. It's Darius Garland. Because if those two are on the same page, that's as good of a backcourt that you're going to see in the Eastern Conference.
Offensively.
Well,
I don't know if they can guard much.
You know, we're talking about J.J. Redick, who was one of the most hateable guys when he was in college.
Well, he still is.
Yeah, I was never a J.J. Redick guy. In fact, he's a SoCal guy.
He's got a very punchable face.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much. Well, you know where I was going to go with that is because he's a SoCal guy. Because those dudes, pretty boys like that with a little attitude, always somehow gravitate to L.A. Same with Freddie Freeman. Yes, I know he's fresh off the MVP, but
he's a great guy.
Oh, my God.
You don't like Freddie?
Freddie, that's my problem with him. Everybody loves Freddie. The day, you know when I went out on
Freddie? He's literally one of the most likable athletes on the planet.
Yeah, but there's a phony factor. When he cried when he went back to Atlanta, I'm like, no, no.
He didn't choose to leave. His agent messed that up.
You don't cry. There's no crying in baseball, especially when you're pulling down $27 million. Don't make me do my Freddie Freeman. I was doing nights here, 95.7 The Game, and for about 10 days. I did the Freddie Freeman, and it got a lot of play.
Well, you'd be able to punch him. He's got fake teeth.
$27 million a year. And I've got to play in L.A. where it's like 85 degrees every day. I don't know how I do it. I just don't know how I do it. Freddie Freeman, MVP, and J.J. Redick. Go to hell, the both of you.
This is where... So we're not going to be able to get hot takes out of Dan. We can't get predictions, but we can develop a most hateable list. And what was it? The most punchable faces?
I'm trying to distance myself from that. The MPFs, I don't promote violence.
The MPFs? No, you don't promote violence. You just... I don't know. Every once in a while, you got to tell like it is.
It got to a point where... What's the guy? Grant Cohn?
Yeah.
Because I didn't put him on the list, but they had him at the top of the list, and he had to respond to it on his podcast and said, who the hell is Dan Devona? What's an MPF?
He got on his pod? What?
I didn't, but apparently there were people that were obviously
listening. Well, you
wouldn't
know. You're not on social media.
So, anyways.
You stay off the
I heard about
it. Maybe that's why you could talk about most punchable faces. You don't actually have to have people on your phone tweeting at you.
There you go. We didn't get back to...
This is the most punchable face in the Warriors.
We teased... I don't think they have one. Well, no, I'll find one.
all right, we're going to workshop that. In the meantime, yeah, what you're going to say something?
Well, Baron Davis, B. Diddy, we got...
Oh, boy. Oh,
podcast.
We got to hit a break. Yeah, we teased that for the last half hour, didn't talk about it. I promise we'll get to it on the other side. As we roll on here on Warriors This Week, we're all over the place. Someone call in and steer us back in the right direction. I'm right with you, 415. Dan's a coconut. Quit talking about Freddie Freeman. 888-957-9570 is the number. We're going to get back into the Warriors on the other side as we roll on a 95.7 The Game.
Now back to Warriors This Week on 95.7 The Game.
Evan Giddings, Dan Devone, Cam Williams, Steve Rizzotto, rocking with you for 3 hours before the Warriors take on the Houston Rockets tonight at 5 o'clock. Warriors live at 4 with yours truly. Got you for postgame as well in between Tim Roy. What?
Forgot to get water during the break.
Well, you can go do it right now. I'll vamp for a little bit.
That's right.
Well,
Where's Reardon? Get in here.
Well, we do have to talk about...
Always take advantage of the Reardon
guy. Your boy.
Who?
Well, Baron Davis.
Oh, yeah.
So, Draymond Green and the Draymond Green podcast.
Baron Bong Davis.
Appropriately named. Has a brand new co-host this year. And actually, I don't think we have any Draymond sound. But, at least from the podcast. But B. Diddy's on, or sometimes he's also not on. I feel like I haven't really heard him much in all the clips that they cut. And so I'm not really sure when he's on the podcast and when he's not. And how often they're recording.
I want to say he's there every time.
Okay. Yeah. So... Baron Davis, local legend, Warriors favorite, we believe, star.
UCLA Bruin.
Smokes a lot of weed. That's kind of my big takeaway from Baron Davis through the first umpteen episodes that he's done with Draymond. He's awesome, by the way. I don't want this to come across like I don't like Baron Davis.
No.
He's a perfect co-host. I'm just assuming it's if and when you can get him on.
And it's sort of an unusual pairing with the two. Because he is just... So I was listening the other day, and they're somehow talking about Detroit, because obviously that's where Draymond's from, and they're talking about the hotels that they would stay at when they're playing the Pistons. And he goes on a tangent, and I don't know what it was he was smoking that day, but he's just got this, he's got this permanent little grin, and even Draymond's like, where are we going? He's like, you remember Eddie Robinson? You remember E-Rob? And he goes in the story how E-Rob got this van, this tricked out van that he invested in. And he said that this thing had the bucket seats, you know, the rims. It was fully loaded. And so you got it. Only he, I can't do it justice. Only he can tell the story. And he's like, so I was in Detroit and I said to him, I said, E-Rod, man, let me get that. I'm going to go get some food. And Eddie Robinson said, yeah, sure, go ahead. You can use the van, but it doesn't turn left. So
you can only make right turns in this van?
So Baron Davis is telling the story, and he's stoned, I think, of how he's trying to get someplace that's less than a half a mile away, and he's making all these right-hand turns. He's like, he wouldn't. He's just laughing and talking about it. He's rolling this big van that can't go left, and Draymond's just like, I don't know who put us together.
But. Dude, first of all, he's a funny guy. He also knows what he's doing. I remember Baron Davis had this run of appearances on the Dan Le Batard show when it was on ESPN. And I was a loyal listener back in the day. And he basically had this bit. So anybody who knows the Le Batard show knows they have this, you know, cast of characters, right? And one of the characters or producers, his name's Roy. He's the only black guy. And so they had this running bit that Baron Davis would not answer questions from any of the white or Cuban guys.
Well, there's one Cuban guy.
Or any of the, I think others. But he would only answer questions from Roy. But Roy doesn't speak. Like, Roy is, if anybody who watches the show knows that Roy is very soft-spoken, doesn't really like to talk that much.
Thin guy.
Yeah, he's also the biggest hockey fan. Among the show members. And so Dan would ask Baron Davis a question and he would give him like a two-word response. And then Stu Gotts would ask a question and you give him a two-word response. And then Roy would ask the same question and Baron Davis would go on this two-minute, you know, very thoughtful, eloquent answer about whatever Roy asked him. And so basically it just became this running bit that Dan would have to ask the question then have to ask Roy to ask the question.
No, that's hilarious.
It was really funny. I love Baron Davis. I think he's a great addition to the podcast. Also because, to your point, he keeps Draymond Green honest and also on his toes because you don't know where Baron Davis is going to go with any conversation. But as it relates to the Golden State Warriors, the other player that we were talking about during the break, who I love his demeanor, not because he smokes weed or can't make a left turn, but it's Lindy Waters III. This dude...
He's your guy. You were on him before
anybody else. I love Lindy. Yeah. I have loved Lindy for a while, and it's probably because he was a member of the OKC development system, and it feels like every guy they put out is going to be a dude. But... Look, he had his breakout game on Tuesday, got put in the starting lineup on Wednesday, and he's probably back to the bench tonight with Wiggins coming back, or probable to come back, but he's going to help this basketball team. He could play.
Well, now they're 13 deep.
Kerr literally said that.
But fill it in, the backstory on this guy, because it's really sort of fascinating.
So Lindy Waters III was, he was a good college player. He played Oklahoma State, right? So he's originally a member of the Kiowa tribe, and I'm not sure, I don't know if he's exactly from the reservation, but he has tribal membership. And so he's one of the very few Native Americans to ever play in the league, which was one of the reasons why I noted him, because my mom's Native American. So anytime there's an association, I just want to learn more about these guys. So he played at Oklahoma State, and then after his last season is when I think the pandemic hit. So Lindy Waters was literally playing before he got picked up by the G League in Oklahoma City. He was playing in like this midnight league. Like he was playing against you and I just to stay in shape, to get some run. He was door dashing in his meantime to make ends meet. And he did this for like an extended period of time. It wasn't just a month or two. Like he played in this midnight league and just worked on his game, hoping for a shot. Got a crack and a tryout with OKC's G League team. Classic story of, I'm going to this tryout, I might as well just shoot the hell and, you know, leave it all out there. Got a contract from the OKC G League team, developed, worked his way up to his point where three seasons ago, I think he was like a 24-year-old rookie, and still didn't get much burn on OKC. The only reason they dropped him is because they have so many guys on the roster that they needed spots for. And Steve Kerr, I think it had extended conversations with Mark Dagenau, who's the head coach with OKC. And he's been trying to sort of implement, you heard him last year talking, he was fawning over how OKC plays offense, getting shots up, taking threes, you know, basically playing the modern game. And so Lindy Waters III was available, and the Warriors picked him up. And immediately it was like, this guy's got a chance to play, and he's pretty good. And he had a really good preseason, had that game winner in Hawaii against the Clippers, shot it really well. And so I'm just glad that someone like that, who literally went from door dashing 4 years ago to now being a rotational piece in the NBA, has a chance to flourish, because there's not many guys that get that opportunity.
He looks like a player, seriously. He just has got a way about him. And his temperament is so conducive to winning basketball. That guy is just keeps his head down. And he's a player. He is an absolute... Look, it's early, right? But he just is... He is just... When he went off the other night, they were all good looks. And he defers. He doesn't take bad shots. I think Reggie Miller sort of highlighted him getting back. Missed a three in the corner and then hustled back to get the rebound on the other end as they had a leak out and like a two-on-one break the other way, did New Orleans. I'm big on that guy. And now that now that you filled me in on what it is that he's been through, how can he not pull for him? You get guys like that, the GP2 stories, guys who are just survivors in this league. I know at the end of the day, Giannis might make your team better, and the big free agents, the Butlers, and all of these big names, the Markkanens of the world, the Paul Georges. I don't know. Give me five of those dudes.
If Lindy Waters III is starting for your team for an extended period of time, I do have my concerns. But
he shouldn't be starting.
No, but I'm rooting for him, because it also, like, I think he knows how to play. He can make the pass when he needs to. He's always been a good shooter. He's got the quote of the year so far by saying, "I keep a strap on me." Yeah. When someone asked him, how does he keep his shot so hot? And also, again, like he's not a perfect player, but like he's 6'6". You know, he's long enough that he can keep a guy in front of him. He's tall enough that he can rebound. And he can help you for 10 to 15 minutes a game if you need, or apparently step in and be a starter and help you beat a depleted Pelicans team. You know, it remains to be seen how many of these guys have staying power over an extended period. And that's why I do think that this road trip, I think we can really take a lot from. Like, when you and I speak next week on Saturday, we will have a Houston game, a Boston game, and a Cleveland game to really dig into.
Yeah.
Assuming they take care of Washington. Yeah.
Text line is saying Lindy is like a Doug Christie with a three-point shot. Doug Christie, a fine basketball player. I like the comparison. Doug Christie, shout out Pepperdine, but I hope not. Doug Christie was a whack job, and his wife was a whack job. So we do not want Lindy to be anything like Doug Christie off the court.
Doug Christie made 4 all-defensive teams.
He's a good player. I'm just telling you, he was a little cuckoo.
Well,
and his wife was just...
We need a little cuckoo.
Not in a good way. Again,
okay.
The reason why I like Lindy is just... The guy is so even keel. Again, we're just getting to learn who he is, but there's something about guys like that. You know, you did a remarkable job, Atlanta. You're reading the book on the guy, right? Or were you reading something about the tribe?
There's a book that, understandably, like the Kiowa tribe's not very big, and there's not a lot of... I think there's only like 20 or 30 people in the world left that speak like the native language. So it's kind of a dwindling tribe. Mm. But the most famous tribal member outside of course, Lindy Waters III, was this, the author whose name escapes me. But anyways, he wrote a Pulitzer Prize winning book back in the 60s.
What about Sonny Six Killer?
Excuse me?
Who was the most famous Indian athlete?
N. Scott Momade, the author of the book, okay. By the way. Wait, what? The most famous
Native American.
Well, probably Otis Thorpe.
Oh, that's the guy.
Yeah, the
not Otis Thorpe. Is it Otis Thorpe? No. Jim Thorpe.
Jim Thorpe, sorry.
Otis Thorpe. The center for the Sacramento Kings.
Jim Thorpe, sorry. Jim yeah, Thorpe. He was like a decathlon gold medalist. Also a Hall of Fame running back, Otis Thorpe. Yeah, Jim Thorpe. God, I was just talking about him yesterday. I can't believe I butchered that. All right, help us get us back on track. Austin from San Jose. 888-957-9570 is the number. Evan Giddings, Dan Devone. Austin, one of our favorites. What's going on, my man? How are you doing here on Saturday?
Hey, happy Saturday, Dan and Ebony. Listen, Waters, man, what a revelation. I like the story and you were just going through, Evan. That's really great to share that. But the guy is a shooter, man. I think he's probably I would rate Steph, Buddy Hield, and Waters as the three best shooters on the team. Just pure shooters. I don't know about his defense. I don't know about all that. But in terms of pure shooting, I think he's the third guy, and I do believe he's got to get more time. I don't care about pecking order and who's been around for 3 years and all that nonsense. Let's put the guy on the court that can score. And I think there's going to be games where you're going to need Waters. I think he's a decent defender too. He's long. Clay was 6'7". I think he's 6'6". So yeah, I like the measurable. So yeah, watch out for that. Listen, the other thing I want to chime in. I'm not going overboard with this start. I know it's 4-1, but I got to look at who they played. I do want to see adversity. Everybody's kumbayaing now, and I know that's great, and everybody's excited. They get along. I honestly, I'm more cynical. I don't care as much about that stuff as most people. I just care about them winning, and I know teams that didn't get along or didn't care about each other, but they won. So I'll be interested to see how they do. And then my last thing, I know I'm going to turn some people off, and they're going to come at me, but Bozinski, man, I love the guy. He's a great – Good player, but I think Kerr plays him a little bit too much for me. I think he tends to get over his skis on a lot of plays. I saw him the other night kind of trying to work the refs, and he's trying to turn into Draymond Green. I mean, listen, dude, just play basketball. I think he's a little overexposed right now for me, but hey, I like what I see, man. Let's see where we go. Let's figure out where we're at after 20 games, though. Let's not get crazy over 4-1. All right, guys, thanks. I'll keep listening.
Thanks, Austin. Well, I think...
You remember that play? I know exactly what Austin's talking about.
Yeah.
And Steve Kerr said that. He's like, no, I'm not reviewing that, bro. Just play. Shut up and play.
Pajemski complains from the bench. That's how I'd put that. Like, it's not just in games. Like, he's the first guy off the bench who's complaining about calls. But I will say that Pods is... Especially the last two games, and maybe tonight, probably against Houston, he has to play the Curry minutes. Because I don't really know who else is going to be on the ball as much as he is outside of Draymond off the bench. I think Anderson can handle the ball. But you need Pods to effectively be your point guard. So I think Austin's right. He's probably playing too much, but that's because Curry's out.
I used to think that. And Austin, you know, we take his calls and I'd be right there with him. Like, why is this guy so privileged? Why does he jump to the front of the line? Moody's been looking for that sort of run since he got here.
But they play different positions.
They do, but in terms of getting an opportunity to play, Pajemski is just, I think he's jumped the line a little bit in front of, you know, other guys and getting an opportunity to play and play a lot. But then I watched him over the last two games. He's a hell of a player. Like, I think, Austin, if you're still listening, you can't deny the fact that this guy makes the little plays and his rebounding and just getting on the floor. He is such a good basketball player, and he is such like that of a Caruso. He's such a guy coveted by Steve Kerr. I think Steve Kerr looks at guys like that and said, give me 10 of those guys, and I'll get us another ring.
Well, I don't know if he'll say he can get you another ring.
Well, I'm being facetious.
But I think he'll tell you I can win a lot of basketball games with those players. Like,
he's really, really, really good. And it's not his shooting, his scoring. It's all the other little intangibles that this guy provides.
And he might have got an opportunity earlier than most. And I think a lot of it was due to need. It was due to necessity. But and people might not like this. But if you put a gun to Kerr's head and you said, you want 10 JKs, you want 10 Pajemskis,
yeah.
I don't think he hesitates. He says, give me 10 Pods.
Which is why he's probably more willing to trade a Jonathan Kuminga as opposed to a Pajemski.
Yeah, and Kuminga is probably infinitely more talented than Pajemski is. But when you watch him play, yeah, like, don't get me wrong. There's some plays, like, Pods is frustrating from the standpoint of, I feel like he passes up the shots that you expect him to take, and then he takes the shots that you don't expect him. But all the other things that he does, he can play with anybody 1 through 15. I can't say the same about Kuminga, and I even don't know if I can say the same about Moody. I really like Moses Moody, but I don't know if Moody can play with everybody. Pods can play with anyone, and he's not a perfect player by any means, but there's not a ton of those guys, I think, in the league that you can just plug and play in any rotation. They can play any spot. You know, maybe they get blown by a couple times. They'll turn the ball over. They'll make young rookie mistakes. But Pods is, I think there's a, every team in the NBA would take a Brandon Podziemski.
He makes winning plays. You win with guys like that. He is, I think, he's a significant and a key part to what it is that the Golden State Warriors are trying to do. When does he get rid of that mask, by the way? Things gotta go.
When does he get rid of that hair?
I like the hair.
Why?
Yeah, it's got a little personality to it.
Well,
a little flop going on there.
Well, he does do that. The mask is something that I think it's just, you know, protocol. Like, he needs it because he broke his nose.
Well, he hates it.
You can tell he don't like it.
Man, I can't stand.
He's got to wear it, though. That's probably why he's out there shooting till, you know, 1 a.m, because he's got to figure out how to make a jump shot with this mask on. He finally did make a few threes.
Whoever it is, the doctors or whomever it is that said...
Celebrini
said, you need to wear this thing. And it's a good call, because if he didn't have that mask on for the last week, he would have rebroke that thing like 5 different times. He does not care. He's still running into dudes at 100 miles an hour.
Well, I wonder how much the mask actually helps. I'm sure it does. It provides some protection. But yeah, Pods is going to battering ram his way into, who they play tonight, Houston? Jabari Smith? Yeah, he's going to break that thing again.
Who had the hockey mask? Was that Jason?
What?
In Halloween?
Yeah, Jason. Friday the 13th.
Okay.
Well, you want to get a hockey mask for Pods?
No, I'm just thinking of mask and scary characters when it came to Halloween, and Jason used to scare the hell out of me. Do you remember the Blair Witch Project?
Yes.
God, that was kept me up nights. And some people, like, that was the stupidest thing in the world. That bothered me.
The scariest movie I think I ever saw. God.
Sorry.
No, this. While we're quickly on the subject, we got a couple minutes left here. The Babadook. You ever seen The Babadook?
No.
Okay, it's an Australian horror film about this mother who found any horror movie with children in it, I'm out. I'm sorry. I can't do the kids who are, you know, that get just possessed. Consumed by a demon, that get possessed. I can't do it. So this kid gets possessed by the Babadook, which is the name of a book. It's a children's book. You open it, infects your child. And so this woman, there's something also about international films, like foreign films that are horror films. Those are far more scary than any American film. You go watch the ones in Japan.
Japan is quarter of the market there.
Can't get through any
of them. What's the one where you'd watch the videotape?
That was The Ring.
The Ring, yeah.
But the American version is not as scary as the Japanese version, which is the original. And the Babadook, anyways, possesses this child, and just all of it was, just gives me chills. I hate it. Anyways, I had to watch it in college for like some film study class. We were studying horror films.
I did it.
There's an art to it.
Film study class, which I thought somebody convinced me this is going to be a 4-unit A, was the most difficult class I ever had to take. I had to study Podziemski? No, Potemkin. I think that's the Russian director's name. The Potemkin Steps. I'm like, oh God, what am I looking at here?
They didn't put you on Stanley Kubrick or something?
You know what I had to like, you know what the movie that I had to break down literally for an entire semester was Citizen Kane.
Yeah.
And it just like every facet of that movie. What's the last line at the end of Citizen Kane?
I don't know. It's overrated.
What's the last line? Somebody tell me. It's
my mom would shoot me for saying that, but
Rosebud. Rosebud.
Could have fooled me.
Rosebud. And the meaning with Rosebud is that it's the name of his sled. It's the last thing he says. Rosebud. It was his sled, which took him back to a much happier time, and the only time in his life they had this level of happiness and pure joy through this turbulent life. So for those of you that are going to rent Citizen Kane.
Well, you just spoiled the end. And the movie that I think I'd rather spend more time dissecting, because we had to do it for 2 weeks. Rambo First Blood.
Come on.
Dude, I'm telling you.
Speaking of hair.
It is one of the more, I would say...
No, bro.
Interesting Stallone films. No, I'm telling you. First of all, it's one of the few movies, one of the first movies that really digs into, at least that was popularized, that really digs into...
Vietnam War?
No, PTSD, bro. The first one, and maybe it's not First Blood, the very first Rambo, when he comes back from war, and he's like this kind of nomadic hitchhiker, and he's in this small Colorado town, and then they end up having to send the National Guard to try and take him out, but he's suffering from PTSD. The final scene where he finally breaks down and just emotionally is wrecked and just tells and spills his guts about all these different terrible things he's done across overseas, that is acting.
It's Stallone at the end of the day.
Yeah, but that's why he had to write. He wrote the whole thing. By the way, people, do not get me on my soapbox for Stallone. I love that guy. On the other side, we'll get back into another emotional
Rocky
wreck.
After Rocky 1, he didn't do anything.
What are you talking about? First of all, do not besmirch Rocky 1.
No, after Rocky 1, he didn't do anything.
He did several things, including Rambo.
I'm not giving you Rambo.
Yes, he did. And we'll get into another emotional wreck. Draymond Green on the other side. No, I'm just... No, that was a cheap shot.
I want to talk about Houston.
We could do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, I think it's very interesting to compare the two situations between Houston.
I'm talking about Angelica Houston, the actor.
Let's just go to break. Warriors This Week, we'll be back after this on 95.7 The Game.
Odyssey celebrates Veterans Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
This is the secret story of a young Russian oligarch who hacked his way to a $93 million fortune. I'm CNBC's senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers. In our new podcast, The Crimes of Putin's Traitor, I'll take you inside a shocking Russian crime targeting the American financial system. Attacks that sources tell me were welcomed by Vladimir Putin's government. Listen to CNBC's The Crimes of Putin's Traitor free on the Odyssey app.